3-1 pitch, swing and a drive. Deep to right field, way up there, way out of here. Goodbye, baseball.
Eight strikeouts for the King tonight and make it 23 consecutive scoreless innings for Felix.
Strike three called on the outside corner, and there it is.
It's time for the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast.
Kyle Seager, that just happened. Thank you very much.
Now, here's your host, Gary Hill.
Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? So close. So close. Welcome back to the Seattle Mariners Baseball Podcast. Gary Hill with you. Awaiting opening day. These next couple of days may be long, long days. If it keeps up like this. Game tonight, though. Spring training game. 7:05. Game tomorrow afternoon, 12:10. Off day Sunday. And then 1:10 at Safeco Field. Felix Hernandez, first pitch. So we are close, I promise. We're so close. I'm getting pretty amped up for the start of this season. This is a good one, too. On this podcast, you're going to hear from Jack Zarenczyk. He was on the Cactus League Report. Rick Riz, Aaron Goldsmith, Shannon Dreher. Great stuff there. So that's solid. Also, Aaron Goldsmith is going to be here. And we're just going to bat back and forth the beginning of this season and where everything is at and the excitement level and everything else. So that's all coming up on this podcast. There's also a fantastic Felix Hernandez highlight coming at the very end. That will get you ready for opening day as well. Next podcast, next time I talk to you, it will actually be opening day. So that's exciting as well, as we are right around the corner. So here we go. Let's not hesitate. Let's not wait. Here it is, the general manager of the Seattle Mariners, Jack Zarenczyk.
Jack, it has been a long spring. You've been down here for a long time. You got down here in early February, and now it's winding down, an off day tomorrow. Two more games remain here in the Valley of the Sun against the Colorado Rockies. I know you got to be anxious to get home. What are your thoughts about the way this ball club has come together over the last couple of weeks, and how happy are you with this team?
If you'd asked me on Sunday, I probably had a different answer than I had today.
Yeah.
No, it's I think everyone is anxious to get going. I think the anticipation of the players, they sincerely believe this is a good team. And I think when you roll down to the end of spring training like this, it's the same for everybody. There's no different. We're not any different than anybody else. But I do think these guys are very anxious to get this going, get out of here. Let's get to Seattle. We're excited about it. The new guys are really excited about being part of this. So, I think we're seeing a little bit of that right now. And overall, I think this is a nice ball club. I think we're going to really be an exciting club this year.
Jack, Lloyd today said this is the toughest week for him. He says it's an anxious week. He feels like they're ready to go. He just wants to kind of bubble wrap everybody and just take it easy. Not take it easy. Play the games, but make sure that they're ready to go on Monday. How do you kind of balance what's going on this week with what has to happen next week?
Well, we've been down here about 7 weeks. Lloyd bubble wrapped me, and I just ready to send me back to Seattle. We've been together a long time, he said. What was your question?
I don't know. No, this way, what do you hope to accomplish in this last week? You've got this is the earliest I've seen it. I mean, the team is basically set right now. Yeah. Now what?
Well, like today, I think James is an example. Didn't pitch particularly well, but he just needed to get dead to the mound. Get to the mound and get his innings in. Yesterday we had Felix who was fatigued. We had a little bit of maybe a tired arm with a couple guys before that, and I think we're seeing some of that. So what you really hope is you get out of here healthy, mm-hmm. That you don't have a setback in the next day or two, and all of a sudden you look up and you go, wow, now a really good spring training is set back by an injury. So I think that we get through this. I know on Friday and Saturday, the starters are just going to play a little bit. They will probably get two at-bats, and they'll be out of there, and a lot of young kids will get a chance to play. They just want to get home, and they want to get this thing rolling.
Jack, speaking of Lloyd, this is now your second season kind of going through the fire with Lloyd McClendon, a new manager last season. The springtime schedule last year was really, really tough for the Mariners. We've made so much conversation about how tough the regular season was, but it even started before that. What have the differences been like in your relationship with Lloyd this spring compared to last spring where you were going together through it for the first time?
Well, familiarity, I think, is the biggest thing, not only with Lloyd and I, but the entire staff that's around here, all the players. Even in, you trickle all the way down to the minor leagues. You know, they kind of have a better idea of what the big league staff would like to accomplish here when we're bringing players over. But for the most part, it's just being on the same page. You know, last year was a learning experience. I think he did very well together, all of us. But I do think that now, you know, we kind of know what the other person's thinking. So I kind of get, you know, when there's something happens, I can walk down the steps. I know when I go in Lloyd's office, I can almost predict what he's going to say to me. You know?
Is that a good thing?
It can be. Yeah. And it's vice versa, you know. And so I'll walk around the corner, and I'll stick my head in there, and he'll go, come on, I know, I knew it. I knew you were coming down here. So, you know, that's a good thing. And I think familiarity is sure. probably the biggest thing. Having a cohesive unit, and I think we have that.
Jack, a lot of questions last year. I think there were very few questions this spring compared to last year. You know, there was going to be that battle at shortstop, but unfortunately Chris Taylor was hurt. A number five starter, Taiwan Walker, absolutely unbelievable. The kid, Tyler Olson, seemed like he came out of nowhere looking for another lefty in the bullpen to go along with Charlie. In your way of thinking, to see what happened over the last 6-7 weeks, what was the biggest surprise for you this camp?
That's a good question. We had surprises. I think, like you had just mentioned, Tyler Olson is being kind of a surprise. But, you know, Tom McNamara, scouting director, talked to me several times in the winter about you really should get this kid in camp because he's going to make an impression. I don't know if he'll make your club, but he'll make an impression before the year's over. I think you'll be counting on this guy, mm-hmm. you know, at some point in time. I'm not sure we had a – Taiwan, you know, we all knew his ability, and this is only spring training, so I really – you know, put the harnesses on anything that happens down here because the air, you see guys miss fly balls, you see balls go off the bat that, you know, go 20, 25 feet further than they will in most parks. So I think it's been a consistent spring. I can't say that anything has jumped out where I looked at it and said, I didn't expect it. I think we knew what we had. But if Olson makes this club, then I would say he's the one guy that I don't think we were counting on making the club out of spring training.
There was kind of a neat story the other day, and Jabari Henry got called up to one of the big league games, and in it, Greg Johns wrote it, and he said that you actually told him, you yelled across the field and told him, which I thought was neat. That's an extra honor probably to hear from you. Hey, kid, go up to the big league game. How much attention are you able to give the minor leaguers in these camps?
You know, I try to talk to them all the time when I see them. You know, when you walk by, you're the general manager, they're young kids. You know, they really don't know what to expect. They don't know how to take you, you know, and you don't really know them. Sometimes we'll be in the cafeteria and this 10 guys will come over because they just got sent over from the minor league side. And I walk over to the table and I say, you guys are eating a lot better today than you did yesterday, which is usually the case because now they're in a big league dining room as of the minor league dining room. So, you know, you try to make them feel comfortable and realize that, you know, they're not that far away. You know, you go through any of these guys. There'll be a point in time this year. There might be a point in time next year when they're part of this ball club. And as long as they have a Mariner uniform on and they're getting this opportunity, they have a chance to open eyes. So I think the biggest thing is keep them relaxed and respect them because I think that it's a big moment for them. Today, I mean, the kid Pagan, you know, have a chance to come in a big league ball game, you know, and pitch, strike out the first hitter. That's huge. He's on the phone tonight. I guarantee he's probably on the phone already. You know, hey, here's what I did today. I don't blame him.
It's good to be talking with General Manager Jack Sorensic. And Jack, at about this time last night, we got the news that you had made a trade. Orozco Ramirez now with Tampa Bay. And Mike Montgomery, a former Royals top prospect, then over to Tampa Bay in the James Shields trade, is now a member of the Mariners. Can you tell us what you like about Montgomery?
Well, Mike was the 36th pick in the draft in 2008. And I saw him in high school when I was a scouting director back then. He had projected, you know, to be a major league starting pitcher. Kansas City took him. He was involved in a trade to Tampa in a James Shields deal. He's a 6'4", 190-pound left-hander who has a really good changeup, got a nice fastball. Our guys like him. We watched him in the spring. He wasn't going to make their club as a starter. I think they viewed him a little more as a bullpen guy. They were in real need for a starting pitch, and they lost three starters. They're going to open the season with three guys on a DL. In our situation, you know, it was going to be tough for Erasmo. I didn't want to bounce him back and forth as a long man and as a starter. We did that a couple years ago, and it didn't work well for this particular player. He came up sore. We had a You know, we lost him for a while. And I think it's just sometimes when you have players in your system, you just run out of time. Hmm. Doesn't mean they're not big league pitchers. It doesn't mean they're not going to be a contributor for somebody else. We had that a year ago with Hector Nwosi. He just wasn't going to be able to help us. He went over to the White Sox and did okay. And we hope that Erasmo does well. But in Montgomery's case, you know, we've got another left-hander. You know, he's got an option. He doesn't have to be on our club. He can go to the minor leagues. And, you know, you're just trying to build up your pitching in your organization.
Any idea which role you foresee him in long-term, a reliever or a starter?
We'll start him.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll start him. We haven't even explained to him what's going to happen. He had his physical today. He may be listening to this show, so he's going to get news. But, you know, he hasn't been optioned out to the minor league, so he's technically still a player in big league camp. So, but we'll speak to him tomorrow. I told him this afternoon that we'd have a plan for him. We plan to start him.
Okay.
Jack, you know, before spring training got underway, I always love to see, you know, the great stories are the kids, see the kids and how they develop, you know, Patrick Kivlahan and DJ Peterson and all the kids that come up from that minor league camp. And this is such a great experience, you know, to play alongside Felix and Robinson Cano and other big league players, the face of Mike Trout and Albert Pujols. What did you want to see these young kids take advantage of with this experience? Now they go down to the minor league camp and start their minor league season to get ready, you know, for the rest of their careers. What do they take from this experience?
Well, you hope it's a process of growth, you know, that they walk over on a big league field and they play in a big league game. They take ground balls beside a big league player and they realize, you know, when you look at a big league player, you're looking at this guy with these glassy eyes like this guy is something, he's special. And they are. But you are too. And you need to understand you're part of this process. You're going to be part of this going forward. So I think they get on a field and they play, they contribute, and in their own mind it should be a confidence factor for them to say, mm-hmm. you know, I can play up here. I can help this club. I can be part of these guys. And I think that's the biggest thing. And then for us as scouts and as the coaches and all that, you want to watch the guys perform. You want to see how they handle this. You're looking for their delivery, if they're pitchers, their swings, their type of pitches, how they feel ground balls. And you kind of look at it and go, okay, another year or so, this kid's going to be all right.
Mm-hmm. How did you come to the decision? You look at the club right now, and you're going with basically two platoons right now, which pretty progressive. You don't always see that. And a bench of players that can all play. I mean, how did you come to that decision that we want 25?
Well, it was opportunity is one. I think the opportunity presented itself for us to be able to do this. I think when you looked at some of the splits, your left-handed hitter, Dustin Ackley is an example. You know, he struggled against left-handed pitching. And if he's going to play every day, you know, that's tough. You know, so I think when we looked at that, if we could bring in a platoon player there, and then Seth Smith became available, you know, we traded a nice young pitcher, Brandon Maurer, for him. But I think the whole process was to try to put the best club on the field, have the deepest bench you could have, give your manager the most weapons he can have, and what you can afford to do. Mm-hmm. That's all the other factor that's tied into it, because it's always about how you could fit money into your roster. So it just presented itself, and right now I think we're all sitting there saying it worked out well. You know, it could work out well, because now we have a platoon system, we have deeper bench because of it, and we're going to put guys like Dustin Ackley the last couple of days hitting the ball the way he's hit the ball the opposite way has been impressive. Mm-hmm. Seth Smith has been impressive.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the whole key.
Jack, can you give us a little insight as to kind of what your day-to-day has been like in spring training? Because we see you outside of Lloyd's office. In Lloyd's office, we see you on the field sometimes as well. But we also know that you are in your office. You got a lot of irons in the fires both here and all over the game. Can you give us an idea as to what day-to-day schedule is like for you?
Well, the one thing a general manager does is, you know, he not only is in charge of the club on the field, he's in charge of the manager, the coaches. He's in charge of the front office staff that's here with us. All those that are still back in Seattle, and ownership as well. You know, so I have a boss, Kevin Mather, Howard Lincoln. You know, I answer to those guys. I will be in constant contact with them. So, you know, when I get here 7 o'clock in the morning or 7:30, somewhere around there, I'll go down check in with Lloyd. You know, try to find out what's going on. There's any shocks today? Something happened.
Is that the industry term?
Yeah,
how many shocks do we have?
Yeah, do I? Well,
hopefully not many.
Yeah, no. You walk in like sometimes you feel like the Midas man. You know, so you know what is going on today? Is there anything I need to know about? Then I'll walk in and check with the trainers. I'll see the players in there. You'll talk with them, and then you go upstairs. emails galore, you know,
sure.
always, and then meet with your staff. We always have a 9:30 meeting with the entire, like the trainers, the traveling secretary, Tim Heavily is here with us today, the PR people, you know, the whole group of the clubhouse guy that we get insight on everything that's going on. Everybody, you know, explain. Pete Vukovic will be in there. Ted Simmons will be in there. So, you know, you'll end up about 15, 20 minutes, and we're out of there. And then you go out on the field, you know, and see what's happening out there, and then go to the ball games. And then have a good time at night, right? Yeah, I'm usually, really, on spring training, most guys are in bed 8:30, 9 o'clock.
For sure.
You know, because you're up pretty early, so.
And then there's all the golf.
Yeah, I haven't played once. So you can't, that's not
I know.
On me.
Nope.
And if you go to the charity event that we'll have, you know, the cystic fibrosis, mm-hmm. and you watch my game, you will say, he's right.
He has it.
He must be very good at his job.
You can hit the ball a long way, buddy. Real quick, we don't want to keep you too long, but always the last few days of the spring are very interesting because clubs are cutting people and making moves. Last year, Chris Young showed up 2 days left in spring training. What goes on here in the next few days? I love your ball club right now, but you're always looking to improve. What happens here in the next few days when other teams make moves?
I mean, a good example is what happened yesterday. You know, we were in a scenario with what he do with Erasmo Ramirez, and we had been in contact for a couple weeks, and then finally it came through last night. This was the deal that we thought made the most sense. And that'll continue to happen. You know, as mm-hmm. we get to tomorrow, the guy waiver wires are going through, players are, you know, we're going to have an announcement tomorrow on someone that we're going to, you know, have in the organization as a minor league player with us. We've been working on that for the last couple of days. Those things will continue to happen.
All right. Well, Jack, thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
There it was, Jack Sorensic, and now it's time. Well, you know what it's time for.
To the sixth, all even at two, and for the play-by-play, here's Aaron.
They're booing me, Rick.
Not you.
That was right on cue.
If they knew you, they would never boo you, buddy.
1-2 pitch, swing and a miss. Oh, did he get tied up? That was dirty from Felix.
Picks up the dirties, washes them, and brings them back fresh.
And we got Aaron Goldsmith here. Hair just glistening in the sunlight, so it's pretty distracting.
I'm a happily married man with a child on the way, and I love King Terry. That is me in a nutshell, and I talk about the Mariners on the radio every night, so
kind of let it eat.
Oh, breaking news, the bees are still there. You look up above the mound, and it looks like you're staring up to the mothership, like you could be beamed up at any moment. That white roof with all the circles and the scaffolding.
Way out of here to right field! Thank you very much!
And we welcome back once again, play-by-play announcer of the Seattle Mariners. It's Aaron Goldsmith. You know, Aaron.
You know, Gary. I feel like Gary. For one, I've the starter. I think Brad is the one now with the glistening hair. You know, I
that's
mean,
true.
That's really his thing now.
Good point. I think he saw what you were rocking, and then you know, he went after it.
He has been on record saying that I inspire him, and I think that might be one way that I have.
You know, I really should put together a new open for you for this 2015 season, but boy, a big part of me does not want to let go of this one. I really enjoy this one.
when I heard it that this most recent time right now, the first thing that came to my mind was like on SportsCenter, the not top 10. All of those clips are my not top tens. So I think you did a fine job. I think it's a great work on your part, collating all those terrific audio elements, Gary.
Thanks. Some of my best work. Some of my very best work.
mine too.
So you ready? You ready for spring training to be over and the real thing to get going?
I think we were all ready about a week ago or so, if not more than that. I think we're all gearing up to get back home to Seattle. I am personally very prepared for 55 and damp. I'll take that any day of the week. So we're excited to get back for a lot of different reasons.
You know, it's amazing. And I've been broadcasting / observing Mariners baseball for a long, long time. And I don't ever remember such a love affair from the national media with the Mariners. There's been high expectations in a number of different years. I think back to 2001, coming off the 2000 playoff run. The expectations were pretty high. I think, you know, 96, 97, coming off the 95 playoff run, and just how talented those teams were with Griffey and Johnson and Buehner and everyone else, and the expectations were high. And here and there, national media, they get picked to win the division and so forth. But it is just, you look around everywhere, national media, it's just a landslide of Mariners being picked for the West. You see them, you know, USA Today, you know, different guys picking them to go to the World Series, win the World Series. It is crazy right now, the expectation level for the national media regarding the Seattle Mariners. How much fun is it to go into a season like this?
It's been absolutely remarkable. And to your point, here are a couple of examples. We had Peter Gammons on with us in the booth at a spring training game. At this point, it was probably about 2 or 3 weeks ago. Gammons said that his pick in the ALCS is Mariners versus Indians. And those are the two chicest picks right now in the American League. And why people are so infatuated with the Indians, I haven't completely figured out. They really haven't changed a whole lot of personnel from their team last year that did not make it to the postseason. But that's not what we're here to talk about. So he had the Mariners and the Indians. I saw Buster Olney write up that his prediction for the World Series was Mariners and the Pirates. We saw Buster Olney's power rankings for what they're worth. They're fun to talk about, and that's what we're doing.
Yeah.
He had the Mariners number 3 in baseball behind the Nationals and the Dodgers. And then, this is something that Kremen and I were talking about in the booth before a game a few days ago. In the local paper here in Phoenix, they had Las Vegas predictions for over-under for wins in a season. They broke it down by American League and National League. I'm sorry, not over-under, but just wins, prediction for wins would be.
Right.
And the thing I found fascinating, the American League West was completely segregated in terms of tops and bottom. The Mariners and the Angels, I think they had the Mariners at like 85.5.
Wow.
Of course, the team won 87 last year, right, which I found interesting.
Yeah.
But they had the Mariners and the Angels both in the top 5 in the American League. In fact, I want to say the Mariners were 3, and the Angels actually might have been beneath the Mariners at like 4 or 5. And then in the bottom, very bottom cellar of the American League, they had the Rangers, the Astros, and the A's, not in any particular order that I just mentioned. So I found that very interesting that you had two teams in the West in like the top 3 or 4 maybe, and then the other 3 teams in the West in like the bottom 5. But you're right, Gary. I mean, those are a few examples of multiple outlets, multiple persons that are very well respected, who have covered the game for decades at this point, and they're all picking the Mariners. And hey, I don't think it's us being homers at all to understand why it's happening. The rotation is healthy. It will be better, you'd have to think, this year, since the Mariners will have a number 3 starter, hopefully for the whole season, barring health. The bullpen is back and intact. Basically, all the pieces are there that were there last season. And the offense has gotten better. So why not? And Gary, don't you think that part of this too, and it's tough to kind of put a percentage amount as to how much, but part of it too is that there's just nobody right now in all of the American League that you go, that's the team.
Yeah.
That's, man, this is the team to beat. I mean, you got the Nationals in the National League, which with the addition of Scherzer and their core coming back, you can understand why that they're what people think would be the favorites. But I mean, can you think of somebody really in the American League that stands out?
No, I think you hit the nail on the head. There is not a front runner right now. There's not the team you look at and say, wow, got to get past them. I mean, look at the AL East as an example of that. Talk about a division that is wide open with no more power in the East. You know, it used to be the Red Sox, the Yankees, Tampa Bay there. All those teams are down, I think, in comparison to years past. I mean, the Red Sox are kind of a wild card, but you know, and then Detroit, I think, has taken a step back a little bit. I think the Angels have taken a step back a little bit. I think the A's have taken a step back a little bit. And some other teams like the Mariners have caught up. I think, to your point, it is wide open. I feel like this is the kind of year that we saw last year. I think you get in the postseason, and then it's a roll of the dice. Because I feel like in this American League, anything can happen. The key is first, you got to get in. And if you can win the division, all the better if you can avoid that first game.
And think about the division, or not just the division, but the American League as a whole. I was thinking about this morning when I got up, when I saw the news that Verlander would begin the season on the disabled list. I mean, think about the guys who are starting the year on the shelf.
Yeah.
Garrett Richards in Anaheim,
yep.
Chris Sale in Chicago, Verlander now in Detroit. The Blue Jays have already suffered a number of injuries to the rotation and to their bullpen as well, if you start looking at the East. You know, last year was the first year, if I'm remembering this correctly, in the history of baseball that there was not a member of the Red Sox or the Yankees who received a single vote for MVP. So that goes to show you where those teams ended last season. What will Tanaka's health be like for the entire year? That's a big question for – and how will Sabathia bounce back while we're talking about the East. I think the East is a complete crapshoot. The Central is obviously fascinating from a standpoint of the White Sox maybe improved more than anybody else. The Tigers are the Tigers. They've won it 4 years in a row. The Royals won the pennant last year. There's a lot of interesting things about the Central. But even then, I mean, are you sold on any one of those teams being a powerhouse? Absolutely not. So I think this is – you should feel optimistic about the Mariners. Don't be afraid if you're a Mariners fan. Don't take the thought of, oh, man, we've been excited before in the past and the team has let us down. Hopefully those the bad flavors of that happening in the past have been washed out of your mouth, because, man, if this team can stay healthy, we know that Lloyd has had last year a knack for kind of pulling the right strings at the right time in terms of personnel, when to give guys breathers and when to push guys. Man, there's a lot of excitement for this team throughout the entire country, nationally and locally as well, and for good reason. I can't wait to get things started.
No, I think you're right. I mean, to me, the Mariners are going into the end of the season as the favorites for the division, because I think they have the least yep. amount of question marks than any team in the division. And I think that's a pretty big statement going into a season. They have the least amount of question marks when you look at all phases. If you look at positions, rotation, bullpen, defense, you look at all those factors, I think they have the least amount of question marks. It's funny, too, you mentioned Cleveland. I actually think Cleveland's going to win the Central, so I guess I'm one of the Cleveland guys. I think the Mariners, when it's all said and done, the Mariners and the Indians could have the two best rotations in the American League.
Boy, that's interesting.
And it's
more
kinda,
than the...
It's kind of going out on a limb, I realize, because there's a lot of guys in Cleveland's rotation who haven't done it, but I think have potential, like Bauer and House, who I'm a big fan of. Carrasco did it, you know, the second half of last year.
Right.
Can he do it again? Kluber did it for a year. I mean, I realize there's a lot of guys in the rotation that they haven't done it for very long, or in some cases not at all. But I think that rotation has loads of talent, and I'm a big fan of – you know, I talk about it with the Mariners all the time. I think Paxton is the key to turning the Mariners rotation from a good rotation into a great rotation. I think he's that key.
First of all, something very interesting about the Indians rotation. Their five starters will cost Cleveland this year roughly $6 million.
Yeah, right.
Corey Kluber will make about $600,000 this year. The finances of how Cleveland has put together, and I agree, it could be one of the best rotations in baseball, is incredible with what they've been able to do. It makes paying Nick Swisher $15 million this season for a guy who will begin the year on the disabled list with two knee surgeries. It makes that look really bad. Regarding Paxton, I've been on the Paxton bandwagon for a long, long time now, for as long as we've seen him pitch in the majors. I think... if he is your number three and he pitches like he's capable of pitching, you have a 1A, a 1B, and arguably a 1C in Felix, in Kuma, and in Paxton. I think it's a tough thing with what we've seen in spring training right now is Felix has not pitched great. He hasn't pitched well in two starts. He's been downright bad. Jay Happ has been knocked around. Paxton really struggled his last time out. We've seen Walker just be absolutely filthy, and we've seen Kuma pitch well. So it's what we were talking about earlier. It's like, can we get out of here?
Yeah.
Can we just get to opening day? Because I think I don't think there's anything to worry about. You'd obviously rather see these guys pitching better than what they have in some cases, but I think there's certainly something to be said about the bright lights and the adrenaline of the regular season that will kick into gear for all these guys. I really do believe in that. Because you feel it. You feel it in spring training with as much of a grind as it is and the heat and the schedule and everything else to it. And this isn't these guys just being babies about things. This is really – it is a really rough grind here in Arizona. And I think once these guys get into the first real week of April with opening day and everything, I think it'll change. But the Mariners absolutely have a chance to think about it, to have a top five rotation and a top five bullpen, not just in the American League, but maybe even in baseball. And when you do that, the offense doesn't even have to be spectacular. It can just be pretty good. And the Mariners certainly have a chance to be at least pretty good on offense.
No, and I think you make a great point. I mean, this is a veteran team. The roster's set. Jobs are set. I mean, they're ready to roll. I mean, you know, the end of spring training, this is kind of what happens to veteran teams. It's not uncommon. 110 on Monday, Felix Hernandez takes to the hill. He's going to get the opening day start for the Mariners. And, you know, we were talking about this before. Just, it's remarkable. Here is a guy in his 20s, what he has done already, his eighth opening day start for a team. And his numbers on opening day are just ridiculous. Wouldn't it be great to see all the expectations, him do what he does on opening day and dominate the Angels once again?
Well, then there's no doubt we're winning the World Series. If Felix goes seven scoreless and strikes out a dozen Angels, I mean, that's then we're all going to be driving home with our hair on fire here. I mean,
wouldn't that be a beautiful start to the season?
You know, I can't. This will be my third season with the Mariners. It'll be obviously the first time that we will have opened up at home in that time. It's been forever since the Mariners have opened up at home, as everybody knows. And I cannot wait just to sit there in the booth high above home plate and just soak it all back in. I was saying to my wife, we were driving to dinner tonight, I said, I cannot wait just to get back to Safeco Field. I mean, people who, fans listening don't get a chance more than likely to get to other ballparks around the American League and throughout the National League. And there are a lot of great ballparks out there. But when Felix is pitching in Safeco Field, and then if you add in any additional element, Kings Court, Knight Court, Supreme Court, and then you add in it's opening day. I mean, there's juice that runs through Safeco Field on nights or days like that you just don't experience truly at any other ballpark in the major leagues. So just to sit up there and be able to take it in and really be a fan as best as you can be while you're broadcasting a game, you know what that's like, Gary. I mean, I cannot wait. I'm ecstatic for opening day and to see what Felix comes up with, because you know that he's going to be spectacular.
Yeah, the atmosphere is going to be sensational. And this is a big first month for the Mariners. I mean, when we look back at what happened last year, the sluggish start really cost them. I mean, we all know it was a one-game difference. You can pick and choose that one game anywhere on the schedule, but it was a sluggish start last year. You look at this year, Angels, A's right off the bat. You face the Rangers, the Astros in the middle of the month, and then you end things again with the Rangers, and then last game against the Astros. A lot of division in the first month. I think a chance to really make a statement early. They can get things rolling early. You know, play well early, get off to a good start. I think that will help the cause, needless to say. I'm not telling anyone something they don't know, but, boy, it would be good to see this team get off to a good start.
Well, you look at this, the schedule in April sets up really well for the Mariners. From the standpoint that they're home a good amount, which is key. There's an off day. Every Thursday is an off day in April, which is nice. I take that back. The last day of the month, the Mariners are in Houston. But you get three consecutive off days there on Thursdays. And aside from the Angels coming to town and then being on the road against the Dodgers, who will be on paper at least a formidable team, you are playing teams in the Rangers, the Astros, and the Twins that at least the way they look right now coming out of spring training – they're not exactly teams that strike a whole lot of fear in your heart. Mm-hmm. You should be able to win each of those series, especially since Rangers, Astros, Twins, back-to-back-to-back are all at home. I think you're absolutely right. You should be able to go into the second month of the season with some good momentum and really on the plus side record-wise. And when it all comes down to one game, as it did last year for the Mariners, I know they say you can't win a season in April, but you can lose it. I think getting off to a strong start in April is going to be really key, and the schedule sets up very nicely for the Mariners in that regard.
Because I think you look at the rest of the division, I think the A's are going to have a feeling out period. All the new faces, you know, trying to figure things out there. You've got the Rangers with their injury problems.
They're a mess.
Yeah.
They're already a mess. The rotation is not formidable to begin the season. Shepherd's their setup guy is likely going to go on the DL. I was talking with one of their broadcasters, Matt Hicks, a good friend of mine, and we were texting back and forth. I said, hey, with Shepherd's on the DL, who's your setup guy? And he said, well, he's not the only guy who might go on the DL, this guy and that guy. And the reason I'm saying this guy and that guy, I texted Hicksy back and I go, I've never heard of any of these guys. I mean, it really, your heart almost goes out to the Rangers in some regards, just because you're already seeing threads of it happening again.
Yeah.
Maybe not to the extreme level that we saw last year, but the team that they're breaking camp with, you look at the 25 guys on that roster and you know a history of like maybe half of them. The Rangers are a mess. They're just a mess. That doesn't mean they can't come back from it, but it's not, man, it's not the foot they want to start out on, and it makes you really grateful for how the Mariners look right now.
No, and that's the best part about this camp. I say it all the time. When you have a veteran team, you just want to get through healthy. And for the most part, other than the Taylor injury, which was very unfortunate, but for the most part, they came through healthy. And that's really – when you're a veteran team, when you're a team that's in contention, you want a low drama, non-injury filled camp, and for the most part, that's exactly what they got.
Gary, here's a question for you: when is the last? And I agree with you about the Mariners being a veteran team. When was the last time that you said, coming out of spring training, the Mariners are a veteran team?
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's been a long time.
2 years ago, we were talking about how this is a young team. I mean, does 2 years make a veteran? I think in some cases, if you look at a guy like Kyle Seager, yeah, it does.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, absolutely does.
Yep.
I think, and Ackley has definitely
Ackley's
shown signs of
too.
Getting his veteran legs underneath him.
Yeah. Well, and then.
So, I mean, I think.
Yeah, look at some of the additions, too. A guy like Seth Smith, who is not a superstar, but he is just a solid veteran. You know, he's the kind of guy
for sure.
That you need in the lineup, the kind of guy that you win with. Just a veteran, and there's the team is full of guys like that now in comparison to years past. I mean, Nelson Cruz, you can put in the same category. Robinson Cano.
Right.
I mean, this is, you know, it's a veteran team.
And, you know, when you think about training camp or spring training this year, it was kind of, and I don't mean this in a negative way, this is actually a kind of a compliment, it was kind of a boring spring training.
That's what you want, though, as a contending team.
You came into spring training with three levels of competition, shortstop, the lefty, the bullpen, and the fifth starter. Well, two of those three were settled with factors that didn't result in quality of play, right? Rollins got dinged for the PEDs, and we saw Brad Miller win the job because of an injury to Chris Taylor. So two of those are taken out with performance on the field not a part of it. And really, Taiwan Walker pitched so brilliantly that halfway through spring training, you kind of said to yourself, even if he comes back down to earth, the job will still be his, unless there's just a shock of some kind.
Right.
So the three points of real interest, other than, hey, we get to see Nelson Cruz for the first time, it's always fun watching Felix pitch, those type of things, most of it got settled really pretty early on, and so as a result, it's kind of like, well, let's go through the motions here, keep everybody healthy, and let's get to April 6th and start playing ball.
Well, April 6th, just in a couple of days. I'm excited to get you back in Washington State. It's been a while. You've been in the sun for a long time, so it's going to be good to see you again, and can't wait to hear your call. 1:10, first pitch against the Angels.
You know, Gary, I'm tired of rubbing this SPF 90 on me every morning, so I'm very excited to come back home to Seattle. Thanks for having me, G-Man. Can't wait.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon.
And now the right-hander ready. And the 0-2 on the way to Reimold now. Swing and a miss and a thing of beauty for Felix Hernandez tonight. As Felix comes through with his first complete game of the year, the eighth of his career, looks to the sky, holds both hands straight up to that dark sky. What a job he did tonight. And the Mariners end up sweeping the Baltimore Orioles.
See you later!